This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
As the great basketball philosopher Rasheed Wallace once said, ball don't lie. Hello again and welcome back to the latest installment of the Droppin' Dimes podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com, director of basketball coverage, Texas basketball analyst, reporter, writer, podcaster, whatever label you can give it. I probably cover it that way for Texas basketball. NBA fan, hoops junkie, you name it. And it's been a... I don't even know how to describe in words this roller coaster Texas basketball has been on, beginning with its trip out to Las Vegas, which seems like a long, long, long time ago. But the reality is Texas played North Carolina on November 22nd, and it's only December 11th. So it's barely been a half month, I guess, since Texas last won, you know, last played in Las Vegas and beat North Carolina. And since then, it's just been this wild roller coaster. And before I talked to you guys on this installment last week, Texas had just lost to Radford and was about to play at home against VCU. Well, Texas not only lost to Radford at home, they lost to VCU at home as well, and in different ways. But, the losses themselves were very different. The Radford loss, as we discussed in great detail, was so much about players settling on offense and there not being enough instruction or forced action or whatever you want to call it from the coaching staff to prevent players from settling for a bunch of perimeter shots on a night when they weren't going in, and on a night when, you know, the first open look from deep, no matter when it was on the clock, was what Texas was going to put up, and that resulted in a loss against Radford. Well, the VCU game happened. I'm the Orange Bloods, on the Ticket City OrangeBloods.com podcast last week, and on OrangeBloods.com as well, I wrote and I said, I thought it was the low point of the Shaka Smart era. When you consider that he's in year four, this is supposed to be a point in time when everything's established. Your culture is established. You've got a roster that's been in your program for multiple years, a lot of these guys. You've got some quality veterans. Everybody should know how Texas wants to play. The players should know what they're supposed to do. Generally speaking, players are going to be up and down from game to game, but generally speaking, especially as it relates to offense. And what we saw in the VCU game was a second-year VCU coach that knows Shaka Smart very, very well from his time working under Smart take a team in VCU to Texas and play Shaka Smart in what was a pretty much dead gym for 37 minutes of the game, besides the VCU sections that were making a lot of noise. Not only was the gym dead and there just this lack of energy from Texas and its fans and whoever's associated, whoever was there in burnt orange, let me rephrase that, VCU beat Texas doing a lot of the things that Texas wants to do under Shaka Smart, especially from a culture standpoint. Let's put it under the culture umbrella or the process umbrella, which are words that they use a lot. Aggressiveness, confidence, mental and physical toughness. That's how VCU won the game. VCU is one of the premier defensive teams in the country. So is Texas. VCU got the more offensive rebounds. They forced more turnovers. They were more aggressive. They were more confident, even though that they were the less talented team, even though that many of the shots they took on offense weren't bad, but you never know it watching them play. I mean, they shot the basketball like they thought every single one was going to go in. Those are the things Texas wants to be about. And here we are in year four under Shaka Smart, and his old program comes to Austin and beats him doing the things that he wants his team to do. That's the optics of that situation to me are why I thought it was the low point of the Shaka Smart era, because it's year four. These sorts of things are not supposed to be happening. a loss is one thing. If you take the Radford loss on its own, who went to Notre Dame earlier this season and won without its best guard, you just kind of say, hey, you know, that shit happens sometimes. It's college basketball. There are going to be nights when guys are just off and the other team plays well and something happens. It's not like Radford is a terrible basketball team. They returned a lot of players from an NCAA tournament team last year. But to lose that game the way they did, and then to lose the VCU game when VCU showed so many of the aspects Shaka wants his Texas team to show from a cultural standpoint, that to me was just such a bad, bad image, symbol, whatever you want to phrase it. It was just a bad look for Texas basketball. And I'll never forget just sitting in the media room post game waiting to interview VCU coaches and players and then Texas players and Shaka Smart. And you could hear VCU fans chanting, "Let's go VCU," from either outside the arena or in a different arena level, wherever. And I'm thinking, this is year four under Shaka Smart. And he left that program to go to Texas. And it just came to Austin and beat him in a basically near empty gym. All those things bouncing around, I just thought it was a real, real, real low moment for Shaka Smart and the Texas program. To their credit, they bounced back against Purdue. Purdue, a much better team than VCU and Radford, although VCU is now up to number 82 nationally in the KenPom rankings. That's quite an incredible jump. They went on the road and played Virginia. Played Virginia pretty tough. They lost 57-49, but hung right in there. I mean, there was a moment in that game. I'm looking at the KenPom win probability score right now. There was a moment in that game with, let's say, it looks like about 7 or 8 minutes left, when VCU had a 43-40 lead on Virginia. In Virginia. And Virginia is elite. That's a really, really good team. Virginia, as good teams do at home, found a way to win that basketball game. They did a lot of their damage at the free throw line, 26 of 30 at the line. That's ultimately what won them the game because they turned it over more than VCU did, and they didn't shoot the ball well at all. 30.8% from two-point range, 27.8% from three-point range. So this VCU defense is legit, and credit Mike Rhodes for doing a good job. Their offense is what it is, but their defense is going to keep them in a lot of games. But still, Purdue, number 14 in the KenPom rankings, a much better team than VCU and Radford. Texas bounced back with a much, much, much needed win to stop the losing streak. And they lost to Michigan State, Radford, VCU. That would have been a real hole for Texas if they would have lost four straight, with Grand Canyon coming to Texas this Saturday. And Grand Canyon's a solid team. I'd put it on par with Radford, and that's basically where the KenPom rankings have them. Grand Canyon played Nevada, hung right with Nevada, who's a really, really, really good team. I got a chance to see them up close when I was in Las Vegas. They were playing in the same gym that Texas was. So Grand Canyon's legit. They're going to come to Texas capable of knocking off the Longhorns. And then after that, Texas hosts Providence, which there was some news today. Providence announced that their freshman guard, A.J. Reeves, who is a stud, big-time scorer, really shoots the ball well from the perimeter, was averaging 14.2 points a game. He's going to be out reportedly for 4 to 6 weeks, so he will not play when Providence comes to Texas. That's a big blow for Providence. I mean, that guy was having a all-conference type of season so far as a freshman and a really, really, really good perimeter shooter. So well, Providence is going to be far from a pushover. They're a team that's 70th right now in the KenPom rankings. And then you get to UT Arlington, who I guess you can kind of classify as a pushover. They're at 244th in the rankings. And then Big 12 schedule's here. It was critical that Texas get back in the win column against Purdue at home, start to feel good about themselves again, perhaps maybe start a little bit of a run here leading into Big 12 play. And if they're able to, let's say they're able to extend this win streak to four heading into conference play when they open up on the road at Kansas State, that would be big because they'd be sitting at 9-3. And at that point, you would say that the non-conference wasn't a complete disaster after looking like it might be with the Radford loss at home, the VCU loss at home. Those two teams might end up being NCAA tournament teams. I would say at this point, it's probably a good bet both of them are, just because of the climb that VCU has made in the rankings of late. You know, they started the year projected to be the number 126 team in the country, and they're already up to number 82. KenPom has them ranking, has them winning 12 games in their league. So they're going to have a chance to be an NCAA tournament team. But if you're Texas, you got to win those games at home in year four in a Shaka Smart. This program should really be sitting at right now. This team should be 8-1. It really should. It should be 8-1. With Grand Canyon, Providence, and UTA coming up with a chance to finish this thing as an 11-1 team in non-conference. And then you're looking at the Big 12 play like, okay, if we're just a little bit better than 500, we're a lock to make the NCAA tournament and probably get a little bit of a decent seed. If they win 12 games in the league or 11 games, talking about a quality seed in the NCAA tournament, you can start to say, hey, this program's trending in the right direction. So we'll see how Texas finishes out this non-conference. We'll dive into this Purdue game a lot more coming up here. Again, you're listening to the Droppin' Dimes podcast on yak.com. I'm Dustin McComas of orangebloods.com. Grab a sip of coffee here. The Purdue game, there were some good things going on. And I thought that we'll start with the offense, because where else would we start? I mean, Texas is ranked number 12 nationally in adjusted defensive efficiency. Their defense has been pretty good the entire season. It really just comes down to offense for them, and specifically the mentality they play with on offense. Shaka Smart basically said after the game, you know, I've hammered the offense a lot both last year and this year. My big gripe is there are often times when Texas looks like it has so much freedom on the floor in what is basically a pick and roll offense, more or less. Sometimes those players with that much freedom can just get themselves into a lot of trouble, whether it's firing up perimeter shot after perimeter shot when they're not going in, or just the ball not moving enough, the players not moving enough. There's just a lot of freedom given, and my biggest gripe with Texas is always, sometimes if as a coach, you've just got to force the action. You've got to remove that decision-making process from the players and that freedom and say, hey, you're going to bring it up, you're going to pass it to this guy, you're going to cut over here, you're going to do this, 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 if the ball goes here, this happens, if the ball goes here, this guy's here, so on and so forth. Just everybody, okay, step by step, this is how we're going to run the offense. And of course, you can put wrinkles in and reads and things like that, but just forcing the movement of the players and the movement of the basketball. We didn't see enough of that against Radford. VCU, there wasn't enough of that, but at least Texas was far more aggressive in driving the paint. The problem for Texas was Kerwin Roach ended up finishing, I'm trying to remember, let's look it up. It was rough. So he finished the game 1 of 11 from the floor, 1 of 8 on two-point shots. He got into the paint a lot, but for some reason just kept avoiding contact and taking off-balance type looks when he got in there. When in reality, he should have lived at the free throw line. He shot 2 free throws. Texas only shot 8 free throws against one of the most aggressive defenses in the country. That to me is where, if your veteran leadership on the floor or your point guard aren't going to say, hey, we got to get to the damn free throw line. Like, we're in the bonus. Let's get to the line. Let's do something. Let's put our heads down, or let's call something for this guy and say, just go drive the basketball. I mean, you're playing a very physical defense that forced 18 turnovers. If that's not going to happen from the players on the floor, it's got to come from the bench. It has to. There just has to be a point where it's got to be driven home to those guys that, hey, we have got to get to the foul line, or we have got to get the ball in the paint with the intent to score the basketball. And on one hand, it's not the coaching staff's fault that Kerwin Roach shot a 1 of 11 from the floor. There's only so much you can do when you tell a guy to get in the paint and make plays, and that's how he made the play. So it's not all on the coaching staff in that situation, but my biggest gripe with the offense is always that there tend to be too many of those spells when outside jumpers are okay, even though they're missing a ton of them, and there's just not enough player movement or ball movement or both because of the freedom in the offensive system. So the interesting thing about the Purdue game was, well, there were a few things about the offense that were slightly different. One was Texas used its dribble handoff set a lot more than it has in the past. And really, it started the game that way and got a wide open three that was made out of the offense. It was a great in-rhythm look. And even Texas had missed the big guy. Jericho Sims was open out of that set to begin the game and eventually found an open shooter on the perimeter in the offense to hit a three. Texas didn't really go back to that much in the first half. Well, in the second half, they used it a lot. And it's pretty simple. I mean, as Shaka Smart said after the game, it's a way to get into a spread pick-and-roll situation where there's more spacing on the floor so that the rolling big is an option because there's not as many defenders clogging that lane. But also, too, it's a way to potentially get your guards going downhill in that type of situation. So Texas went to it a lot, and what it forces is it forces guys to move, and it forces the basketball to move. It's basically guys going around the perimeter, handing the ball off or passing the ball off and moving around the perimeter while eventually a big will come up and set a screen as the defense is moving, and then you get into a spread pick and roll type situation. So it forced the movement, and it worked fairly well for Texas. Texas, it was one of their better games on offense when it wasn't turning the basketball over. It had 15 turnovers, which it's been weird. Texas was so good earlier this season at not turning the basketball over, and now they've had back-to-back games where they had 18 against VCU and 15 against Purdue. Some of the ones against VCU, I mean, Dylan Osakowski turned it over three straight times on possessions late in the game when he passed up three-pointers and backed a guy down. So there's some of that going on. I mean, Jericho Sims had three turnovers in 14 minutes. He was basically, as well as he played the last two games, he was pretty much non-existent in this game. So you've got some players committing turnovers that don't necessarily handle the basketball a lot. So it's not like the guards were committing a ton of them. You got three from Sims, two from Osakowski. Really, the only guards to turn it over more than one time were Mitri Long and then Matt Coleman. Matt Coleman was terrific. He had 18 of his 22 points in the second half and was really, really good. But there was more forced movement, although it wasn't some, different type of motion set or whatever offense you can think of it. But there was some forced movement, and it helped. It got Texas into the paint more. It got more rhythm to the offense. The offense moved the ball more. Texas assisted on 17 of its 23 made shots. That's a terrific percentage. That's 73.9% of their makes were assisted on. That's really, really, really good. Really good. That's the kind of number that would rate elite nationally. And Texas scored 1.11 points per possession. If Texas were to do that against quality defenses all year, they'd probably be a top 40 or top 30 offense nationally, which would be terrific, especially with the way they play defense. So even with all the turnovers, Texas against a pretty solid defense did a good job on offense. They threw the ball ahead in transition. And they shot 11 of 25 from three-point range. And I know while some people will say, well, they just made shots. That's definitely true to an extent. Let's not say it's something that it's not. But I do think that a lot of the threes they made were in rhythm on time shots. When those types of shots, when everybody in the Texas uniform knew the guy was putting the ball up. Because it was in rhythm, it was probably off a good feed, it was in a good spot on the floor where a guy is supposed to be spacing-wise, and it was taken in a way that looks like guys had time to take a good shot correctly. When that happens, Texas is going to shoot a higher percentage. That's just the way it is. It's not going to shoot a great rate when it's forcing shots or in late-clock situations or settling for open jumpers over and over and over again early in the clock when they're not going in and their confidence starts to get dinged down a level. A lot of these three-pointers came in the rhythm of the offense, and guys stepped into them and took them the right way. And when that happens, Texas is capable of doing this. We've seen it in other games as well, the Citadel in North Carolina, but we've also seen far too often the opposite effect, whereas the ball just gets pounded into the floor or passed around the perimeter, and then it becomes stagnant, and then there's not a lot going on offensively in terms of schematic stuff, and then three-pointers are just forced. Or guys are just settling for them to shoot them because they're open, and then it starts a snowballing effect. So a lot of these perimeter jumpers came in the flow of the offense. Texas also got to the foul line 16 times. They made 15, which proved to be huge because Texas only won by 4 points, 72-68. So there were some positive things going on with the Texas offense. There were also a couple of things happening that I felt like Texas really needed to do in order to have more success on offense, which is if a guy doesn't have it and is not doing what you need him to do on offense, you got to use the bench as a teacher. And that's what Texas did with Dylan Osikowski and Jericho Sims. Sims just had one of those games like he's had far too often this year where he was either frustrated or down on himself or something was happening. And I think, you know, he had 3 fouls and 3 turnovers in 14 minutes. That's usually when he's in early foul trouble, or he commits an early turnover, you can almost say, uh-oh, probably not going to be a good night for him. Whereas the VCU game, they run a set for him earlier. Maybe it was the Radford game. One of the two, they ran an isolation set for him early in the game. He spun in the paint and dunked on a guy, and they had a great game. Sometimes it's that easy. If a guy gets going in the right way, he's going to have a good game. If he doesn't, sometimes these guys with up and down confidence levels won't be able to pull themselves out of it against quality teams. So Sims and Osikowski basically were benched in down the stretch in the second half. Jace Febres didn't play down the stretch, but I think that was more of a defensive matchup type thing because he had six rebounds. He led the team in rebounds. He had 6 rebounds in 17 minutes, hit 1 of 3 3-pointers, didn't commit a turnover. I thought he was okay. I thought he held his own for the most part. He really competed on the glass. He tried to compete on defense. So I think Elijah Mitri-Long playing down the stretch was more of a product of the matchup type deal in Texas wanting another playmaking guard on the floor to handle the basketball some. And Mitri-Long was playing well. He finished with 10 points. He hit 2 of 4 threes. He was 2 of 2 at the line. He had 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 turnovers in 24 minutes. That's the kind of night they need from him off the bench in 24 minutes. But really the headlining roster usage was Osikowski and Sims not being on the floor late. It was Jackson Hayes and Kamaka Hepa playing for those guys. Of course, Hayes has been terrific this year. He's been better than Jericho Sims. Texas probably can't remove Sims from the starting lineup just because of the big confidence blow it would be to him. But Hayes has been the better player, and he was again, really solid in 26 minutes against Purdue. But Hepa playing 23 minutes and playing on a stretch was a big deal because he's very limited on defense. I know some of you are saying, well, Dylan Osikowski's not a great defender. Well, Dylan A has a lot more experience in how to defend and where to get on the floor on defense. And he's also a much better defender. He's quicker laterally. He has more agility. He plays with more strength. So Hepa is very limited on defense. And there were some times when Purdue tried to go right at him. Radford really went right at him. Or Radford and VCU tried to go at him when he was on the floor. But Hepa held his own on defense. And part of that was because Carson Edwards was basically Purdue's offense. And for most of the game, that worked. He scored 40 points, even though Texas basically tried to deny him the basketball every chance he could and had a guy, at least one guy on him for pretty much every time he was holding the basketball. So Purdue didn't really go at Hepa in one-on-one situations, which helped allow him to stay on the floor. But really what allowed him to stay on the floor is he ran the offense the right way. The ball moves at a different rate on offense when Kamaka Hepa's in the game. And early in the season, I got on him a little bit because he was like a robot. He would just pass and screen immediately when he touched the ball. When in reality, he's a really skilled outside shooter. And that's one of the main reasons why he was recruited. And you shoot the basketball at that stretch four spot. Texas wants him to shoot the open three when it comes in rhythm every time he touches the ball. And even though he went 1 of 5 from beyond the arc, he took shots on time. He took the right shots. He took them the right way, and he took them on time. So there's offensive rebounding situations out of that. Or the offense still flows the right way when a guy like that is going to shoot the basketball. But more importantly, the ball moves with him in the game. He gets it out of his hands quickly if something's not there, and he gets on to the next spot. Or he knows where to look in certain situations when he does touch the basketball to maybe have a skip pass or to throw the ball inside or where to kick the ball around the perimeter or whether to go screen or not. He has an IQ or a feel about him on offense and a pace that Texas really needs. And Osikowski wasn't giving Texas that. Once again, he passed up open perimeter shots and tried to put the ball on the floor and drive into a crowded area and do something that he can do, but that's not what Texas wants from him on offense. They want him to shoot the ball when he's open or move the basketball. And you know, we can debate about whether Texas's base offensive system is what it needs to be doing or can excel at, or if it needs to do something else. But that's basically what it is. So with Hep in the game, the ball moves so much better. And it, I think it really helped allow guys like Roach and Coleman to make their imprint on the game. And Kerwin Roach, after a slow start, was solid. He had 5 assists. He only committed 1 turnover. He got to the free throw line 4 out of 4. And he got to the free throw line those four times were late in the first half when Texas was in the bonus. He only shot 6 times, but 2 of 4 from beyond the arc, 0 of 2 from 2-point range. He didn't try to force anything. He had a steal and only committed 1 foul. And this was after about a 6 or 7 minute stretch to open the game, and he was bad. And Shocker Smart said after the game that they talked to him all, they challenged him all week to come out and play the way he's capable of and that Texas needs. He wasn't doing it at the beginning of the game again. He was hesitating, just was playing with this weird weight on his shoulders. And Shaka said that he had a talk with him early in the game. He couldn't tell us what he told him. But from that point on, Roach was a better player. But really, Coleman was the difference maker. The 18 points in the second half, 3 of 5 from 3-point range, 5 of 6 from the foul line, 4 of 6 from 2-point range, including a big, big, big bucket late where he drove into the paint, stopped, threw a little pump on Carson Edwards to get him in the air, and then hit a little, I guess, baby floater or you know, shot from the paint. It wasn't quite a layup, but it was pretty close. But that was a big bucket to keep Texas ahead in the game late. He also had 2 blocks, 2 assists, 3 rebounds, 3 turnovers. While Edwards was going nuts, it would have been really easy for guys like Coleman or Roach to just put their heads down and say, shit, it's not our night. This dude's torching us, even though we've had a hand on his face. We've gotten our hands on some loose balls. We've given as much energy as we can on defense, and the guy's got 40 points. He's cooking on us. Well, Coleman, you know, there was a couple of moments where he tried a little too much to turn into a one-on-one game with Edwards. But later in the game, as he settled in, he just had this look on his face like, I'm going to match you, man. When I get the ball, I'm going to make a play every single time after you make a play. And he didn't force the issue either. You know, his 3 out of 5 threes were quality looks. One off of in the corner off a terrific no-look feed from Corbin Roach. Coleman shot wide open, shot it the right way, you know, said something to the Texas bench coming back down. That's the Coleman that we saw a lot to end last season in games like the Oklahoma game when OU played at Texas and he was better than Trae Young when he was on the floor. Or, you know, the NCAA tournament game, even though Texas didn't win, he made play after play in that game in the second half in overtime. That's the Coleman that Texas needs, the understanding of just be a playmaker. Sometimes that means passing the ball a lot and getting a bunch of assists. Sometimes that means your team needs you to score. And that's what he did against Purdue. So there were some positive signs on offense for Texas coming out of that game. Their defense didn't waver. They did a really good job defensively of – I think that their plan, based on what they said after the game, was, hey, we know Edwards is going to get his. They didn't know he was going to get 40. That's for damn sure. But sometimes you got to tip your hat to that guy that some of those bombs he was making were just – he was literally just holding the ball and staring at a guy with a defender in his grill and then pulling up and shooting over him from like – I don't know, 28, 29 feet out. Like, guy's going to shoot those shots and make them. You just got to tip your hat if you're contesting them. I mean, there's only a couple of times when Texas didn't defend him in a quality way. So I think Texas' plan was, hey, Edwards is going to get his. Let's shut down the rest of these guys. And that's what Texas did. I believe the other players combined to score just 28 points. And I think they shot 30% from the floor. And Purdue as a team only had 6 assists, which is well below its season average. You know, even though Edwards is such a high usage player, excuse me one second. This cold weather is getting some junk in my throat. Even though Edwards is one of the highest usage players in college basketball, Purdue actually runs some really quality offense. And we saw it sometimes in the first half of that game, just a little pocket pass here or there, or some little back screen or something like that to get an easy look for somebody else. So holding Purdue to just 6 assists was impressive. Purdue is one of the best offensive rebounding teams in the country. VCU killed Texas on the offensive glass. Purdue only had 9 offensive rebounds, 24.3% of their misses resulted in offensive rebounds, which is about 12% lower than their average. Texas held them well below their three-point shooting average. So defensively, the plan was executed despite Edwards going nuts. So there was a lot of execution going on both ends of the floor. On its own, this was a positive thing for Texas, maybe even a very positive thing because of the quality of opponent. But when you throw this into the big picture, you just gotta wonder if you look at, you know, let's just look at the last 7 games that Texas has played. Louisiana Monroe at home, 65-55 win, ugly. The Citadel, maybe the best game to that point Texas has played all year, 97-69 win, great on both ends of the floor. North Carolina, obviously beating them was a great win for Texas. Michigan State, really good in the first half, not so much in the second half. Radford, disaster. VCU, similar type of disaster, but in a different way. And then Purdue, quality execution on both ends of the floor. So who are these Longhorns? Which brings me back to my original point of the opening of this podcast and why I thought the VCU loss was such a bad symbol and a low look for Texas and Shaka Smart is in Shaka's fourth year, we're asking ourselves, you know, who are these Longhorns? What kind of team are they going to be? Those are the types of questions you ask in year one and year two. By this point, programs have an identity. And I know Texas wants their defense to be an identity, and I know their defense has been really good. But identity also needs to come from all the things they talk about. And this is a program that spent so much time in the offseason on offense and being aggressive and moving the basketball and spacing and being in the right mentality. And what we're on right now is just a real roller coaster with this basketball team. And sure, this is the point of the season when teams are figuring themselves out. But there's only 3 more games until Big 12 play starts. Only 3. December is always labeled as a big growth month for Texas because now that classes are wrapping up, finals are happening, guys can really just get to the gym for the next basically month and just, you know, some of those stressors are removed. And that's not an excuse. Being a college athlete at Texas isn't easy. Texas takes its academics seriously. So, yeah, these are young men that have a lot going on. And when you can remove some of those stressors, you often see guys start to excel as athletes on the floor. So this is about to be a month or so stretch when Texas can focus on just basketball. The hope for the Longhorns is they show a lot of growth during this period because they need to, because right now it's basically who are they going to be? Are they going to be the Citadel of North Carolina the first half against Michigan State or Purdue? Or are they going to be Louisiana Monroe, Radford, VCU, and parts of the Arkansas and Eastern Illinois game? I don't know. I don't think they know, which is an issue when you're at December, you know, December 9th against Purdue, and two of your best players, guys that, you know, in Sims, people were talking up as a no-doubt NBA pick this summer, and then Osakowski's a redshirt senior. And those guys aren't able to be on the floor to end the game. And maybe that's a message that those guys needed and they respond in a certain way. I don't know. But that's not a great thing. But on the other hand, the execution on both ends of the floor when those guys weren't in the game was good. Texas won the game and played at a pretty high level and showed some improvement in areas they need to. So we'll see. We'll see. I just think that this is... If you're a Texas fan trying to figure out this Texas season, good luck. I can't quite figure it out. I don't think the Texas coaching staff can quite figure it out. And the weird thing is, and this isn't a weird thing, but I guess the fascinating aspect of all of this is Shaka Smart thinks this could be a special team. He's talked about this team in a way that he hasn't talked about any other Texas team since he's been here. And specifically about the ceiling of this team. While also maintaining that this is a team that was going to need a lot of growth. But the high-end product that Texas is capable of reaching and that he believes they will reach is that it's going to be a really good basketball team. And if you look on paper, this is the best roster he's had at Texas. When you look at the blend of personnel, experience, and talent, it's all there not to be a title contender or anything like that, but it's all there to be a solid team that could potentially win multiple games in the NCAA tournament and finish in the top four in the Big 12. The problem is we haven't seen that a lot recently. And if Texas can build off that Purdue game and play at that level, they're gonna enter Big 12 play on a four-game winning streak and then see what happens against the Big 12 grind. If they keep going up and down, it's going to be a long road in the Big 12, because the crazy thing about the Big 12 is if you look today, the Big 12, there are only two teams rated worse than Texas in the KenPom rankings, and Texas is at number 37. Oklahoma State is 64, Baylor 68. So that means West Virginia, OU, TCU, Kansas State, Iowa State, Texas Tech, and Kansas are all ahead of Texas right now. It's going to be another brutal grind. And while I think this league lacks elite teams or teams that can turn into elite teams, what it doesn't lack is teams that could turn into very good teams. Oklahoma has been better than we thought it would be. Texas Tech has been terrific behind their defense. Iowa State has been better than people thought it would be. Kansas has been Kansas. Kansas State hasn't quite been as good as people thought, but it's still a quality team. West Virginia the same way. It hasn't quite been as good as people thought it would be, but I was kind of surprised people thought it would be the team that it was projected to be. When you lose Daxter Miles and Javon Carter, that's tough, man. That's the identity of the program right there. So they're scuffling a little bit, but they're number 34 in the rankings. And Oklahoma State and Baylor are not pushovers at all. You know, Big 12 is going to be a grind. Texas is if it's going to have the season it believes it is capable of having, more Purdue has to happen on a consistent basis and less Radford and VCU. And if those Purdue-like performances happen consistently, we'll probably look back at Purdue or Radford and VCU and say, man, maybe that was a turning point where maybe that was when Texas figured out something, or maybe that was just a team figuring out itself or its identity. I don't know. But I do know that past results are the best indicator of future results. And right now what we have with the Longhorns is a mixed bag. And we'll see how they close out the non-conference play. So, again, this is the Jop and Dimes podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas of orangebloods.com. And that about does it for us today. I've rambled on for a long time about the Texas basketball program, kind of a state of affairs, VCU definition, Purdue breakdown, looking ahead, you know, Grand Canyon, a quality team, will come to Austin on Saturday. And then after that, it is, pull up my schedule here, Providence on Friday, and then UT Arlington on Friday. So only three games between now and December 28th. Time for guys to get their legs back, get in the gym, work on some things, fine-tune some things, grow as players. And if Texas can come out and play at a high level in those three games and enter Big 12 with some momentum, hey, who knows what can happen. But the Longhorns really cannot – they can't afford another loss, because that would basically mean you probably got to win at least 10, 11 games in Big 12 play to feel good about your NCAA tournament hopes, or you're entering the Big 12 tournament in need of doing some damage. So we'll see. Squeeze in a little recruiting tidbit. I posted this on orangebloods.com earlier on Tuesday. Texas is out seeing five-star Jaden McDaniels today. All of their 2019 focus is basically on him, and I continue to hear that they're a real player in landing him. I think right now it would probably be either Washington and Texas are probably, I think, the two teams' best position right now. Kentucky is offered recently, which I always just laugh when these programs like Kentucky offer the number four overall player in the country now. Like, what did you just see that makes you want to offer this guy? You're going to say you didn't know if you'd take him? Like, you didn't have a spot for him? I mean, come on now. Jaden McDaniels would probably be the best offensive player on Kentucky's roster right now. And that's a roster that has, like, what, 92 different five-star players? I just always get a chuckle that, oh, yeah, we finally extended Jaden McDaniels a formal offer. Well, what the hell were you waiting on? You weren't going to take that guy if you wanted to go to Kentucky, even though he just took an official visit? Well, that cracks me up. But Kentucky, as they are with any five-star they offer, is in the picture for sure. But I don't get the impression, at least right now, that he's McDaniels is much of a Kentucky guy personality-wise. But that's the way Keldon Johnson was very early in his recruitment, and that turned as well. So we'll see. But Texas is up there visiting five-star Jaden McDaniels. He is the guy, the target left in the 2019 class. And you can get to orangebloods.com and get a couple of updates on the 2020 target list as well. In the meantime, get to the Yak. Check out all of our other content. We got tech podcasts, football podcasts, a little of everything podcasts, recruiting podcasts. Recruiting is full speed ahead right now towards the early signing period. So make sure you're tuned in to Jason Sukumel's recruiting podcast, Anwar Richardson, the very entertaining podcast. I'm sure that we're going to get a little of everything from him now that football is kind of dying down. I always like this time of year because we get to have a little bit more freedom about, you know, what we deliver to you guys, although this was all basketball because we're in the middle of basketball season right now and there's a lot to talk about. But until then, enjoy your Christmas shopping. Stay warm. Don't go insane when watching this Texas basketball team. I recommend drinking Pennsylvania Dutch eggnog when you watch the Longhorns. If I could write my stories with that, I would, but I can't because I'm a bad enough editor and writer as it is right now. But that's it for this week's edition of the Drop Dimes Podcast. Thank you for listening, and tune back in next week as we revisit As the World Turns with Texas basketball following the Grand Canyon game. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned into theyak.com and have a good holiday season.